Welcome to the Get Clients Now Facilitator Teleforum on helping participants design an effective Get Clients Now program. This is CJ Hayden speaking, and also facilitating today will be Christine Carey, the Director of Training and Licensing for Get Clients Now. Say hi, Chris.
Hello, CJ. Nice to be here.
This line is open for your contributions and questions, but please keep yourself muted unless you have something to say. You can use the mute button on your phone or press star 6 to mute yourself, and we'll stop periodically and ask for questions and comments. Remember that you'll need to unmute yourself by pressing star 6 again when you'd like to say something. If you're speaking and we don't acknowledge you, you are probably still muted. Well, our intention with today's teleforum was to help you as a facilitator become a more skillful guide to your participants in designing their Get Clients Now programs. We think that when a participant has a well-designed program to work with, they're more likely to succeed with it, and that means they'll be better satisfied with you as a facilitator, they'll be more likely to do further work with you, and they'll be more likely to refer others to you. So what we mean by a well-designed program is one where all the elements work together to support the same end. The participant has a program goal that reflects what they really want from their business. Their success ingredients and their daily actions are chosen to support that goal. The marketing strategies that they chose are reflected in their success ingredients and their daily actions. They've designed a special permission that's appropriate for their situation, and the quantity and frequency they've chosen for their daily actions are both realistic for achieving their program goal and a good fit for the time, the money, the skills that they have available. So we're going to talk about all those elements today and give you some ideas for how to help your participants align them. And Chris is going to kick us off by talking about goals.
Thank you very much. And when I sat down to think this through for a minute, one of the things that occurred to me was that a lot of people, when they're designing a program and they think about the goals, so we're talking about two levels of goals during the 28-day program. There's the level of immediate, what do I want in this 28-day chunk? And then, of course, there's the goal, the big pie in the sky with cherries and whipped cream and sprinkles on top, the big kahuna goal. And a lot of people do not give themselves permission to think in terms quite that expansive. So it's happened quite a few times, actually, where I've been, as facilitators, hopefully you're offering to and are reviewing your participants' action sheets. And as I read through the action sheets, when I look at the big picture goal, I see something that is actually not, it doesn't land like a big picture goal. It lands like a medium picture goal or a watered-down goal or something like that. And often with those people, I end up either having a conversation or an email exchange with them and just sort of asking more about that, more about the bigger goal, whatever they can tell me about it. And they're like, well, it just seems like what's realistic for now. And that's an interesting thing because we didn't ask the question of what do you think is realistic for now. We asked the question of what do you really, really want in that bigger picture kind of way. So when you're thinking about your goal, those five questions at the top of the daily of the action worksheet are really important because that's what we're hinging the whole 28-day program on. So the big picture goal means just that. The big picture, I got what I wanted with the sprinkles and whipped cream and cherry and everything. So you have that separate goal. And then within that, you look at what do you think is going to be fun, interesting, relevant, however you want to couch it, for you in the next 28 days. That becomes your 28-day goal. Those two goals need to obviously correlate, your big picture goal and your 28-day goal. The more they reflect each other, the more success you're going to have. When you're making your 28-day goal, you really do want it to be something that's attainable. There's nothing that's more depressing or frustrating than having a goal that you just can't get there from here for whatever reason. Your head's not in the game that way. The goal is too challenging. sometimes the goal isn't challenging enough, like you're a little afraid to put down what you really want in the next 28 days, or in the big picture goal, either way, that level of fear can really do you a disservice. When we take, okay, let's take for granted then that you've picked a big picture goal that really makes sense to you, and then you've started to design this 28-day goal that seems appropriate to help you achieve that bigger picture goal. That means then that we're going to need to take daily actions and design success ingredients that are going to get you closer to those marks. How to pick those is a little adventure in and of itself. You want to make sure that your daily actions and your success ingredients are in alignment with your 28-day goal. It's not uncommon to write these things down and unwittingly have them be unrelated. It doesn't make sense as I'm saying it out loud, but I've seen it in writing where someone will take the time to write down the big picture goal, the 28-day goal, and then their daily actions and their success ingredients, and those four things actually not correlate in any kind of a straight line to each other. That's just going to make your life a lot harder. And it's probably going to make your program unsuccessful. Or if it's successful, it won't be successful and with a level of ease that is actually available to you if you did, in fact, line those all factors up. When you're picking your daily actions, the thing that you want to pay attention to for your participants is really, are they picking actions that are easy for them? Like, are they picking should actions, is how I think about it, should in quotes, or are they picking actions that are actually inherent to who they are and what they're good at and what their interests are, where their skills and strengths are? I'll give you a quick example. When I was in coaching school, I was in school with this guy named Wayne Manning, and he's a very successful coach, and he's a very successful business owner because he's really good at networking, in particular with the Chamber of Commerce. And Wayne and I were building our businesses about the same time. We went to coach school together. We graduated. We start working whatever system we think is important for us to work. And so we both go off to the Chamber of Commerce in different cities. And he has immediate success, and I have immediate failure, I guess. I don't know how else to put it. Immediate, holy cow, I must be doing this wrong. This isn't working. And over the next couple of years, his business just shot up. The more chamber events he went to, the better it went. And as for me, it was completely the opposite. If you were designing a Get Clients Now program for Wayne, you would put Chamber of Commerce and networking events and that type of in-person shaking hands and kissing babies type stuff as a regular action for him because he's really good at it. It plays to his strengths and interests. As it turns out, if you were designing a program for me, that wouldn't work out so well. I now know that. I've got empirical evidence to support it. Of course, I didn't know that at the beginning. It's fine to pick an action or two to run an experiment with if you're curious about whether you might be good at those things. Don't make your entire program like that, but it's okay to have a few where you're sort of testing the waters. In my case, I tested the waters, probably tested them too long, which is another danger, but it didn't work out for me. So it doesn't play to my strengths. You know, my daily actions will need to be different. The same with the success ingredients. You're going to need to pick success ingredients that really are a fit for your program goal, and they need to be in a fairly straight line between this particular goal and the bigger picture goal. So the success ingredients might be something that supports one or the other, but if it doesn't support either, then it doesn't matter how good of an idea it seems. You have to ask yourself why you might be doing the action or why your participant client might be doing the action. I can keep talking about this for a couple minutes, but what I'd like to do instead is actually stop and ask, do you have any questions about what I'm saying, this idea of aligning your big picture goal with your short-term goal, with your daily actions and your success ingredients? I hope I'm making this make sense. What kind of questions might there be about that? Okay. if there aren't any questions, then the thing I would like to continue on with is this idea that you really do need to, and I hate using the word need, but in this case I think it's the right word, you really do need to pay attention that your clients haven't just written down something that seems like a good idea for someone else rather than them. Depending on
Chris,
whether
could you speak up a little bit?
Oh, I sure can. Yeah,
thanks.
Hang on 1 second. Let me just turn up the phone a little bit. Okay. So depending on, is that any better, I hope?
It is.
Depending on what type of person or what type of program you're doing, if the person is an individual client or if the person is a group participant, it'll be a little bit of a different dynamic. I do encourage you to spend a little time getting to know the personality and the individual business and goal of that person so that when you're reviewing their program and you're looking at all these actions, you can really assess whether they're going into should, quote-unquote, land, or if they've really picked things that are in alignment with their goal, with their interests, with their strengths, that kind of thing. The more you do that, the more fun you're going to have with the program, the easier the program is, and, of course, likely the more success the program is going to have as you run the program, which just makes it a whole lot more fun to do. Anything you'd like to add, CJ, about success ingredients or daily actions? Or is there a question?
Yeah, Chris, I got a question. How do you know at the beginning of a program if a participant has the right goals for him? What are the clues that make you know that it's probably wrong?
Yeah, that's a good question. There have been a couple of people in the programs I've done lately who have picked goals that, for whatever reason, my intuition just tells me that it may not be the right thing. I know that's not an exact science, but there have been a few, well, there's an obvious way to tell. If the person has picked a goal that just seems completely unrealistic, you'll want to bring that up. Can you really get 20 clients this month or, you know, whatever it is? The other thing that people often do is they pick like a compound multiple goal. I'm going to do this and that and the other thing, which is we only want one finite action for the 28 days.
Mm-hmm.
And people will push back frequently and say, but that's not enough, to which point you can say, I understand, and it still would be more than you have now, correct?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. CJ, is there anything else that you were thinking about with this alignment?
I think that's good about the goals and what their alignment needs to be, both to the person and to the program. Let's talk a little bit about marketing strategies and stages of the universal marketing cycle and how those need to be lined up with success ingredients and daily actions. So if you're marching your way through creating the program, you're starting out by setting a goal, and then you're starting out by choosing marketing strategies, but that's only the preliminary choice. Then you're choosing a stage of marketing to focus on. Then you're setting a goal. Then what you're doing is you're looking at your success ingredients and your daily actions. That's when you're in the process of refining what are the right marketing strategies for you based on the stage of the universal marketing cycle that you chose. And you really need to pay attention with your participants to whether the success ingredients and the daily actions in their plan make sense for the marketing strategies that they say they're using and the stages of the cycle that they say they're focusing on. So your participant starts out by choosing their marketing strategies based on really the first hunch that they have about what's best for them to be using, and also based on the effectiveness rating, the relative effectiveness rating that you teach them. Then they choose the stage of the marketing cycle, And in the chapter two, there's a section where they're actually guided to choose specific marketing strategies based on the stage that they chose. So they're walking into the choice of success ingredients and daily actions with that information. They're directed, choose success ingredients and daily actions that match up with the stage and strategies you chose. But they don't always do it. So when you're reviewing someone's action worksheet, you really want to look at the success ingredients and daily actions that they selected. Do they match the chosen stage, the chosen strategies, or are they just out of left field? And there's a couple of different directions somebody can go when in choosing incorrect success ingredients or daily actions or inappropriate inappropriate elements. One is that they're choosing from the wrong stage or the wrong strategy, and the other is that they're choosing from all different stages or all different strategies. So here's an example of what I'm talking about. Here's an example of poor alignment. Your participant chooses the universal marketing cycle stage of following up. And if you read in Chapter 2 what it suggests for the following up stage, it says that your strategies should be all about direct contact and follow-up and networking and referral building. Those are the strategies you should be focusing on if you're focusing on following up. Well, if you're following up, those strategies should be executed with existing contacts. But if your participant chooses success ingredients that say prospect list, lead sources, live networking venues, okay, well, those were technically chosen from the correct strategy buckets, right? Because they're direct contact and follow-up strategies and they're networking referral building strategies. But the ones that they chose, prospect list, lead sources, live networking venues, that all suggests that they're still trying to fill the pipeline. So even though the strategies look kind of right, the stage is wrong. They should be choosing only success ingredients that match up with their desired stage of following up. Now, if somebody wants to pick one thing from a different stage, not a problem. But if everything they pick is from a different stage, that's a problem. It shows that they are not really thinking through the implications of the stage that they've chosen to follow up, to focus on. Here's another example of not having alignment, not just poor alignment, but no alignment. Somebody chooses if they're going to focus on the stage of having more sales conversations. And they have picked the marketing strategies of direct contact and follow-up, networking and referral building, and public speaking. But then when you look at their daily actions, they've got things on there like add 20 new social media connections each week and interact with my online network 30 minutes daily, post to my blog once a week, post to social media 3 times per week. So they've chosen items from filling the pipeline, from following up, plus items about the marketing strategy of writing and publicity. They're not following the guidelines at all. So what they're doing is they're thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, I came into this program thinking that I would be more active in social media, so I want to make sure that gets included in my program, forgetting everything that you've taught them about choosing a program based on the stage of the cycle and appropriate marketing strategies, right? So this is what happens when we come in with preconceptions about what we should be doing instead of following the guidelines. And your job as the facilitator needs to point that out to them and say, you know, there's no match here. What you really need to be doing is you need to be lining these things up. So here's an example of good alignment. Your participant chooses closing sales as their stage they're going to focus on. And the strategies they picked are direct contact and follow-up, networking and referral building, and writing and publicity. The success ingredients that they chose are professional credibility, testimonials and references, and stronger relationships. those things match up. Those are all success ingredients that are going to help them close sales, and they're success ingredients that allow them to make use of direct contact and follow-up, networking and referral building, and writing and publicity. Then they choose daily actions like follow up with all prospects within 7 days, make one contact about writing and media interviews weekly, work to build relationships with 5 prospects per week. Again, you have alignment. Those are daily actions that are appropriate for somebody who's chosen a stage of closing sales and the strategies of direct contact and follow-up, networking, referral building, writing, and publicity. So that's what you want to be looking for as you review somebody's plan. Is there alignment here? Are these things congruent? And sometimes it's not just a matter of checking the icons on the action plan menu and the success ingredient shopping list and making sure they're the right icons. It's actually looking at the specific item they chose and seeing if it makes sense. For somebody who's focusing on follow-up to choose prospect list and lead sources, okay, they've got the right icons for their strategies, but are those success ingredients that help somebody who needs to be focused on following up? No. No, those are success ingredients for filling the pipeline. So those are the eyes that you need to look through when you're reviewing somebody's plan. So any questions or comments about that?
I have a quick question or maybe a comment. When I look at participants' sheets, it's a little bit easy for my eyes to glaze over if I've looked at more than a couple of them. And I can't, I'm sure I'm not the only person that's experienced that. And at some point, I'm tempted, I don't actually do this, but my monkey mind is like, oh, just check it off, it'll be fine, you know. And I can't imagine that as a participant trying to fill it out, if especially if it's your first time, you are really just trying to chip those icons and hope that they work, you know. But the more you do that without thinking it through and the more you let your eyes glass over either as the participant or as the facilitator, the worse it's going to be for you because you're making it harder on yourself.
Did you just answer your question?
Yeah,
really. It's true, and that's what you need to encourage in your participants as a facilitator is what you may have done in the past is you may have just thrown a dart and said, okay, I'm not sure what to do, so I'm just going to do something. All right, well, that's better than doing nothing. That's true. But here, we've given you some tools. So make use of these really great tools that they've given you. And that's the facilitator's job, too, is to make use of the tools and really look at what is the alignment here, is there alignment here, and help your participants look with the same eyes of how to apply the tools appropriately.
And can you just say something real quick, CJ, about picking from the menu in the book versus perhaps you have an action that you're really dying to do, but it's not on one of the book menus?
Sure. And that's absolutely okay to invent your own daily actions and your own success ingredients as long as what you're choosing matches up with the stage of the marketing cycle you're focusing on and the strategies you said you were using. You know, if you've just really been antsy to start posting to your blog more often, okay, great. Recognize that if you're doing that, you are already using the strategy of writing and publicity. So if you had said that this month you want to have your focus on public speaking, your focus isn't on public speaking. You're de facto putting a focus on writing and publicity. Now, we tell you 2 to 3 strategies is best, 4 if you absolutely must. Okay, so maybe you want to add that 4th strategy, but make sure that that's really what you're choosing. You're choosing to add instead of substitute. Make sure that's really what you want to do, is add instead of substitute. Very often, you don't need to add. You just need to do a better job at whatever you're doing, as opposed to adding more to the plate. And I think it's important to counteract our participants' tendency to just keep adding more. So let's talk next, Chris, about a couple of other elements of the program.
Yeah.
TJ, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Great. Go ahead.
Would you recommend every participant to think hard if he can take something off the list so he has less than he first thought he needed?
Only if that something more exceeds our recommendations. So if you see somebody trying to choose five strategies, for example, definitely take one off the list. No more than four ever. If somebody's focusing on following up, well, if you follow the book's recommendation, it says only two. You should not be focusing on anything other than contact and follow-up, networking, referrals, if you've chosen the follow-up stage. So if somebody's outside of guidelines, yeah, definitely call it to their attention so they realize what they've done and they have the choice to choose. Otherwise, just because somebody's choosing a lot of things, as long as, again, it's within guidelines, I don't think it's necessarily the right thing to do to corral them at first when you're first reviewing their plan. But it may be something where you want to raise a yellow flag to yourself that after the end of week one, you want to listen for that participant's statistics and see how he or she is doing with what it is that they've chosen.
Okay, thank you.
Which is closely tied to this idea of special permission and rewards. If we're working our way through this action worksheet, there is a place for you to write down what a reward would be and what your special permission is. And I think it's easy to overlook those or maybe not give them as much weight as they might deserve or need. I want to look at real quick what a special permission is and isn't. A special permission is something that you can say to yourself so that you can keep going. It's something that feels comforting or inspiring or motivating or confidence boosting. It's something that matters to you. It's something that speaks to you and the voice that might contradict you or hold you back. The idea of a special permission is that there is often something that is very specific just to you that could stop you from moving forward, or that you could make mean something like, it means that I shouldn't be doing the thing, whatever the thing is. Special permission is designed to address that. Ideally, it's like a cozy nest where you can go and rejuvenate or motivate or whatever it is you need at the moment. It's not supposed to be something that's, again, a should or a good idea, or something that's conditional or a harsh voice or something that you use to beat yourself up. And I've had it where I've had participants use their special permission as one lady had a permission to do her marketing first thing in the morning, but for her that wasn't permission. She didn't set it up as permission, and it didn't feel to her like permission. It actually felt to her like something she was supposed to do, and her life would somehow turn into unicorns and rainbows if she could just get her life organized so that she did her marketing first thing in the morning. But she wasn't that girl, and her life and business didn't run that way. And so when we were doing the check-ins consistently, when we asked if she did her special permission that week or not, the answer, or you know, those particular days, the answer was always no. And after a couple of weeks of that, it became apparent that her special permission was more like a stick than a carrot. That's not very much fun. It's certainly not incentivizing. And rewards fall along the same line. You know, we want to make sure that the rewards are there to feel rewarding, just to be obvious about it. You reward yourself for the effort, not just the results that you get. Obviously, there's a big picture goal. There's this 28-day finite goal that we're looking for. we're working real hard towards that. And on a daily basis, you have at least a couple of actions, depending on how you've organized your program or your participants have organized the program. You've got a couple of actions that you're probably supposed to be taking action on that day because you said you were going to, you know, supposed to in a good sense in that way. If you're doing those things consistently, then you want to make sure you reward yourself. So you could make a little game out of having daily rewards or weekly rewards or, you know, those sorts of things in addition to the 28-day reward. And I would really encourage you not to let your participants get away with saying something like, just finishing this task is reward enough, because it's actually not. It will make you feel good, which is great. And we need something to anchor that feel-good thing. And that's where something physical like a reward comes in. And that could be as simple as standing up and shaking. One of my first coaches, Katarina Rando, taught me that. Anytime I did something good, I was supposed to stand up and shake my body or jump up and down right that second, because that cements it in your body as that was a good thing, and your brain acknowledges it as a good thing. You got the dopamine hit, you got your reward, you did something to physically anchor it in your system, and now you're really off to the races. As silly as it seems, if you don't do that physical part, whatever you've chosen it to be, a bite of ice cream, shaking like a dog, jogging around the house and singing the Rocky theme, doesn't really matter what it is, something big or small, that little tiny thing is what makes the reward rewarding. That's where you get the dopamine hit. It's, this part of our brain is so primitive, it's just like checking or training your dog. If the dog does the trick and you don't give him a snack, he'll be like, wait a minute, I did the trick. The deal is I do the trick and I get a snack, and then I do more tricks and I get more snacks. That part of our brain works the same way. If it does the trick and it doesn't get a snack, it's going to be upset with you. And that is disincentivizing. It starts a downward spiral so that you are less likely to go and do those actions again. So if we're looking at rewards and special permission, they are specifically set up to keep you incentivized, to keep you going forward, to feel like you're supported in that, that you have supported yourself. You're doing this program, your participants are doing this program because they said so. They want something. And our job as the facilitator is to help them get it, hopefully to help them get it with less struggle, more ease, and more fun than they would have gotten it without doing the 28-day program or doing it in a group with you or individually with you. So the reward and special permission makes it easier. This is one of the tools that we can use to make it more easy. It's a very bad grammar, but I hope you see what I'm saying here. I want to make a quick note about self-compassion, and I would love for you to bring that up when people are designing the program, as we've been talking about overall, and then specifically with this reward and permission angle. Please have some self-compassion. Please remind your participants to use self-compassion. This is what it's like to use the carrot instead of the stick. And there are lots of folks over the years that I've run into who feel like if they're not using the stick, somehow it's not challenging enough or they're not going to get anywhere. But there has been a lot of research about self-compassion and the impact thereof. And the more self-compassion you bring, the better chance you have of achieving your goal. And as ironic as it seems, at the end of the year when they were doing a retrospective of, you know, the top 100 things CEOs did this year to make them successful, one of those type of things. It was just a sentence or two from all these different CEOs and people that had founded companies and the like. Self-compassion came up more than once on that list of 100, and those people didn't know each other. They didn't collude on the answers. And I just thought that was so ironic that I would be reading a list of all of these people that are at the top of the food chain, some food chains bigger or some are smaller, right? Bigger or smaller businesses, but either way, saying that they felt that part of their success, a large part of their success, was the level of self-compassion they brought to themselves and their business. If we can apply that same principle to designing and carrying out the Get Clients Now program, can you imagine how much more space and freedom there would be, and then, of course, how much more success there's going to be for the people that are doing it with you. Are there any questions about special permission, rewards, compassion, anything that I've just mentioned?
Chris, I love the perspective that what you're doing is you're training yourself, like you might train your dog, right?
Yes.
To perform well under certain conditions. And
yeah.
I think that's a great perspective to be looking at the Get Clients Now program from, because it emphasizes one of the primary themes of the Get Clients Now program, which is it's only for 28 days. This is training. And if you can take those 28 days and train yourself in that period of time to do things well, then after this, some of those things that you learned are going to be ingrained into you, and you'll just keep going very naturally without having to force yourself and have all this structure around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll find out what you're good at and what you enjoy and what feels like a fit for where you're at, personally, professionally, where the business is going. Just makes it easier to figure out what to do, basically, and to get yourself to do it. And rewarding makes it so much easier to go towards the thing you're after, because then you really are incentivized to go for it. CJ, do you want to talk a little bit more about about daily actions and the reality check of how many actions and which actions and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, talking about the guidelines that are in the book, we tell people that they should have 10 daily actions, and the daily actions that they choose should include one or two appetizers and one dessert. So the one or two appetizers are actions that they're taking to build or create or work on their success ingredients. And then the one dessert is something that they're choosing to help themselves be more effective and productive overall. So that means that they should have 7 to 8 main course actions that are aimed directly at getting business, meaning that they in some way include client interaction or they result in client attraction if they're done well. So the first thing about the quantity and frequency question around daily actions is that they really should have 1 to 2 appetizers and one dessert and 7 to 8 main course actions. And if somebody's choosing something different from that, you need to poke at it a little bit and find out what's up with them. Sometimes people will leave off the appetizers and the dessert and want to have just 10 client-getting actions, which ends up backfiring if, in fact, they are therefore not progressing on their success ingredients or there's nothing on their list that is enjoyable or about self-care, which is what the desserts are intended to be. And that they have those 7 to 8 main course actions there, so it's not all about appetizers and dessert. Now, it's okay if somebody wants to choose only 5 or 6 main course daily actions instead of 7 to 8 if the quantities and frequencies of those things are sufficient. So I'm not suggesting that you should let somebody choose just 5 or 6 main course daily actions and have all the rest be appetizers and dessert. No, I'm suggesting that if somebody wants to have only 8 daily actions overall and then only 5 or 6 of those are main courses, great. That's fine as long as the quantities and frequencies of what they're putting down are relatively high. So if they're doing everything daily and their numbers of the things that they're doing are 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, right? It's fine not to have a lot of different things that they're doing as long as the ones that they're choosing are likely to lead to their goal because they're doing enough of them. So the quantity and frequency that someone chooses for their daily actions, in general, it should be pretty close to the maximum that they can do given their available resources and their situation. It should be a stretch. We tell people that their goal should be a bit of a stretch. Well, your daily actions should be a bit of a stretch, too. They shouldn't be sitting well within your comfort zone. Given all of that, the plan needs to be realistic in three different ways. Will this level of activity bring them the goal that they've stated? Is this list of daily actions possible to do within the context of their situation? And will they actually do these things? So the first of those questions, will this level of activity bring them the goal that they've stated, that you can potentially judge at the beginning when you first review their plan. You can get a feel for whether that level of activity they're planning to do seems right for the level of ambition stated in their goal. But the second question and the third question, is it possible within the context of their situation, and will they actually do these things? That may need to wait until you hear their statistics after the first or second week. And then you'll be hearing what their situation is. You'll be hearing what they're choosing to do and not do. And that may be the time that you need to come back to them and say, wait a minute, you put this thing on your list, but you're not doing it. Is there some reason that you think that's going to change between now and next week? Or in reality, do you need to choose something different here? Or you've chosen to make these 10 phone calls a day, and I hear in your situation that that really doesn't seem possible. So what needs to happen here? Does this need to be reduced to a different number, or should this be a different action altogether? So that's what you want to be listening for as the program progresses. So when you're looking at a plan up front and you're reviewing it, what do I mean by unrealistic? Okay, so here's an example. Let's say that your participant is themselves a coach, and they want to get 4 new one-on-one coaching clients this month. But every action on their list has a quantity of only 1 or 2, or a frequency of only weekly. Think it through. For somebody to get 4 new clients this month, they probably need to have somewhere in the vicinity of 8 to 12 sales conversations to get 4 new clients. So even if their pipeline is already full, that means at minimum they would probably need to have somewhere between 16 to 24 asks, by which I mean requests to have a sales conversation, whether it's them requesting that of a person or a person requesting that of them. And depending on the quality of their pipeline, that number could go way, way up. I mean, somebody could conceivably need to make contact with a number like 120 contacts in order to get 12 sales conversations in order to get 4 coaching clients, right? So if they're planning to follow up with only 3 people a week, that's not going to cut it. This is an unrealistic set of actions for the goal that they've chosen. A much more realistic scenario would be, let's say they want only 2 new one-on-one coaching clients this month, and each of the daily actions on their list has a quantity of 3 or more and a frequency of daily or multiple times per week. Okay, great. So now you've got a match up. Now it's starting to sound like it's realistic for somebody to actually get the result that they want given the level of effort they're stating they're going to put into it. So if you don't know enough about the client's business, the participant's business, to be able to make those kind of judgments, ask them. Ask them what they know. See what they have already determined. What's your ratio of sales conversations to clients, for example? You know, if you talk to 2 people, does one of them pretty much decide to become a client, or do you need to talk to more like 3 or 4? Find out their experience of the quality of the people on in their pipeline. When you follow up with 10 people who are in your pipeline, Do you get only one of them wanting to have an actual sales conversation with you, or is it more like three or four? And questions like that will help you sort out whether or not the plan seems realistic. What you can do in a group situation is you're reviewing the plan, you have questions, you're not sure it looks realistic, email them. Email them and ask them a couple of questions about it. Don't hesitate to do that if it's going to help this participant develop a better program, or if you feel as if you don't have enough information to judge it, but you've got questions. Another example of the kind of unrealistic plan you might see is a participant has already said that they have a full-time job, but the daily actions that they've listed are going to take them more than 2 hours a day. It's a rare person who can do more than 2 hours of productive work after a full day on the job. So if you see somebody who's putting down a list of things that are going to take them 3 or 4 hours a day, but you know they're already fully engaged elsewhere, definitely unrealistic. In that scenario, realistic would be that somebody who's already got a full-time job elsewhere has daily actions that only take 60 to 90 minutes a day, and their goal is really scaled back to match that. So something to keep in mind about this process is sometimes when you get to the end of the design process and you reality check the daily actions, you might actually need to go all the way back to the beginning and revisit the goal. Sometimes goals need to be scaled back because the level of daily actions that would be required in order to achieve that goal simply isn't achievable given the participant's current circumstances, the amount of time they have available, what their other commitments are, what they're actually going to be willing to do. So any questions or comments about that aspect of choosing quantities and frequencies for daily actions and reality checking them?
CJ, I know that for me it's really easy to get this part wrong. I'm like over ambitious, you know, and at some point my monkey mind usually does kick in and go, well, that's not enough. If you don't do more than that, you're not going to get anywhere. And then you end up, you know, I at least end up with a plan that's got way more stuff that is realistic on it. But I feel like if I don't do it, it won't work, right?
Absolutely, and that's a tendency that many people have. It's once again that tendency to just add more, just add more. That's the path to success. Pile it on.
Right, more is better, yes.
More is better, that's right.
It doesn't work that way, though.
We need to counteract that in our participants and be on the lookout for it. At the same time, making sure that people are not putting so little on their plan that they're never going to achieve the goal that they've set. So I hope that this has given our facilitators some ideas for how to better help participants design effective plans. And if you haven't been reviewing your participants' plan designs after week 2 of the program, you really ought to consider doing that. And remember that you can also give feedback on a participant's plan at any time, even if you already told them it was okay at the beginning. Circumstances change. Your knowledge increases. Their knowledge increases. Absolutely, it's okay to come back to somebody who you said, yeah, looks like a great plan, a week later and say, I wonder if this plan is serving you. Remember that your participants are probably working with Get Clients Now for the first time, while you have worked the plan at minimum once before and hopefully more often than that with other people, and you're going to get better as you go. So even if you don't think of yourself as being a marketing expert, you know much more than they do about Get Clients Now. Let yourself be an expert in that. And remember that the more successful your participants are, the more successful you're going to be as a facilitator. Anything that you would want to add to that, Chris, in conclusion for this topic today?
Well, you said something that really made a difference to me when I first was learning the Get Clients Now system as a facilitator rather than as a participant, which is to give yourself permission to be an expert in the system. That's what we're asking you to do. We're asking you to be a good facilitator and a good facilitator for Get Clients Now and an expert in what Get Clients Now has to offer. We're not really asking you to be anything more than that. And I know it was easy for me to make up the story that I had to become a marketing expert overnight, but that's not true. You need to be an expert in the system. So often, a frequent review of the book, listening to these forums, doing the reader and LinkedIn facilitator communities, just different ways like that, looking at the Answer Center blog, different things to kind of keep you in touch with the program in general, and maybe posting some questions or answering questions that other people have posted. I know over the years that's been really valuable for me, and it seems to be valuable for other people too, because other people are, there are definitely people doing those things. So whatever degree you can keep yourself sort of immersed in the system so that you feel like you bring expertise to it, that will help build your own confidence and be more successful as a facilitator.
Great, Chris. Excellent suggestions. So thank you, everybody, for participating today. Make sure that you mark your calendars for the next teleforum, which is going to be on a marketing topic, which we will announce in August. And the next teleforum will take place on Wednesday, September 24th, 2014, at this same time, 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 1900 British Summer Time. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.